Blog Talk Radio.
And somehow my audience is not here. What is going on? But anyway, the show must go on. So hello, everyone. This is Nancy Monroe from Knowledge Shift, and today's Training Tech Talk is going to be on how to manage global employees. And of which Allison is probably still dialing in. But, you know, a lot of organizations today are outsourcing their, not necessarily their key activities, but a lot of their essential activities that can be done outside the office in a remote location. Or we're expanding globally. Technology is allowing us to do that more and more. And so how do you manage those employees that are not sitting down the hallway or not sitting across the cubicle from you? And so I thought we'd kind of share with us some different tips on that today. And, you know, one of the things that first comes to mind is technology that I started selling, gosh, years and years ago, which now most people just kind of use the generic term a WebEx or a Connect type of technology platform, but also Skype is another one in Google. So Google Hangouts is another tool. So there's lots of tools out there today that allow us to have virtual meetings. In fact, I just had one, had two back-to-back meetings today. One was with a woman in Malaysia and a gentleman in India. And then I just had another one where we were sharing things from a remote location down in Texas, and I'm in the Chicago area. But part of it is building that culture so that people can have a sense of belonging to the organization. And so I've met a couple of different organizations that are have a significant part of their organization based in Europe or based in Russia. And so I was kind of talking to them about how do you go about building that sense of culture and feeling like they're part of the larger organization. And one of the things that they said was really key and important for them is to actually meet face-to-face and not always try to operate 100% remotely. And so even though the technology allows us to do that, there's something to be said for meeting people face-to-face, making that human connection, literally. But then after that's done, then it was much easier for them to work with other people. And so, you know, I want to talk about that too. And if any of you have any questions or examples that you want to share with us as well, you know, please type them into our chat room as I'm moving along here. But the other thing, too, is does it all have to be in the same language? And my husband actually works for a translation company. And what they're finding is that a lot of organizations are starting to localize the content or localize their websites or localize a lot of the manuals and things like that, because it still is really important for organizations to, you know, if you have a large population based in a different country, obviously giving them, especially safety manuals and things like that. There's actually studies out there that talk about that if you are able to put safety and not everybody's driven by the U.S. OSHA regulations, but if your organization is, you still want to put that, if at all possible, in that native tongue, because there may be some misinterpretations around if they were reading it as English and not quite translating the meaning of that documentation correctly. And so those are one of the things that I would say, if you are making a significant effort in doing that, that you should certainly look at localizing any kind of really important documents that do have significant risks associated with that, if at all possible. And so I'm just going to see if Allison is jumping on board here. And you join. Speaking of managing globally, how about managing in the same city? Training tech talk time. I will note, and some of you that are on right now, this is not our normal time that we typically offer our session. So that probably threw her off just a little bit, but we'll wait for her to join here. But so, again, going back to if you have any essential documents that are critical to safety issues, policies and procedures. You know, I would strongly suggest that you put those in that local language as much as possible, because there are certain nuances around languages that are misconstrued. I mean, some of us have seen, you know, when the Olympics take place, some of the signage that they put in place that's supposed to mean bathroom or supposed to mean don't do something or do something, and a lot of times does not get quite translated correctly. So, you know, certainly think about doing that as well. So there's actually a link that I'm going to put in here. It's called 10 Steps to Effective Human Resource Strategies from a Global Standpoint, that I think would be a good little tip sheet for us to take a look at. And this is from strategy-business. So let me put this link in the chat room here so that if any of you want to go to it right now, you can do that. There we go. So let me just go down the list here. So IBM is one of the companies that they reference in here. Oh, here we go. Here's Allison. Here she is. Ta-da! Yes, it's not our regular time, so, you know, we kind of threw everybody off here. Even the audience somehow disappeared on me.
They're
like down the hall.
You know,
they're down the hall.
They were probably there at 11:30, like there's
always. I know.
Always.
We didn't put the sign on the door. they're probably down the hall watching Ellen or something.
I'm sorry. I have donuts and everything for them. It's just terrible.
Doggone it. Oh, well. Anyway, I was just sharing with our listeners out there that there's a link that I just put in here, 10 Steps to a Global Human Resource Strategy. And one of the companies that they're featuring in here is IBM, who's obviously been around for a long time. It says they reversed its HR policy in 1995 to deal with the new global gestalt of a new business strategy. So instead of cutting jobs abroad to reduce costs, they're now focusing on customers' needs, increasing overseas assignments. So they see, obviously, the global growth, they see that as a great way to build their employee base by using those employees that are outside the U.S. And I think IBM, I think this is right, I think they're trying to be as virtual as possible all over the place. So there's a big office here in Chicago that I actually spoke at, gosh, a couple of months ago. And most of the mm-hmm. people that were there were just what they call hoteling. I mean, they may have worked from their home, but they came down for a meeting, or they're there for meetings, but they don't actually have a fixed cubicle anymore. And so I think that's one way that I think organizations are starting to, you know, they might have a physical footprint in different cities globally.
Right.
But they're allowing the employees to kind of drop in and out of those physical places so that they're not necessarily assigned to an office, but they can kind of come in and out and be more fluid that way.
Well, and I think that there's been a lot of things that really help with that. I mean, certainly real estate costs are just expensive as can be
mm-hmm.
from the whole gamut. There's also this new kind of methodology of supporting your network, even by hiring another company to do that and kind of share bits of your network out on the interwebs, the cloud.
The interwebs, yes.
And depending on, you know, what you wish and what you need to farm out, they're really offering some pretty robust options out there that, again, allow you to kind of keep those numbers smaller, yet still have access to some pretty large, fast technology that we used to manage individually with IT departments and stuff, and now it's kind of this almost sharing of multiple mm-hmm. lands that a company then runs for all of these different companies. For the security aspect of it and the legal aspect of it, it seems like a beautiful dream for a company that may have some challenges, that their focus
mm-hmm.
is on what their business does rather than on their IT. And they can offload their lawyers to that company to go make sure everything's good.
Oh, sure.
Rather than their thing. But also phones, you know, that phone systems, PBXs, have been so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's very virtual. I know Toshiba has some really interesting virtual products where you can have things route here and there and have all the features of your desk phone, but now it's available anywhere you go.
Right.
And that pick up and move and follow me kind of concept with files, with phones, with makes the employee much more able to be in a lot of different places, which can be great or really hard depending on the employee themselves and the managers themselves.
Right, exactly. There's this chart here that I found with the SHRM. SHRM's this Society of Human Resource Management, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So the top challenges facing organizations. So today, they have today on the chart, and I'll put a link to this, and then 5 to 10 years from now, they envision this. So people management is number one.
Yep.
Number two for both is innovation. And then the next one really gets into government regulations. But the one they say today is second place, though, slow growth in key markets, which I'm not sure what they mean.
Right. I was just going to ask. I'm like, wait a second.
Like,
there's more work that she's going to say. No.
Yeah. No, I'm like, that's it. I'm like, okay. I'm like scratching my head like, ooh, what does that mean? And then they don't see it as a top priority or top challenge 5 to 10 years from now.
I wonder what they think is going to solve itself, how it's going to resolve
that. Yeah, and one that I thought that would be higher is supply chain management.
Uh-huh.
Because I think they're naive if they don't think that's a big challenge, because look what happened to Fox Pro and Apple with the, in Japan, the nuclear power plant melting down, kind of shut down the whole Asia-Pacific rim area and shut down some of their key supply chain to building iPhones.
Yes.
And so I don't think people realize, even if you have one little part that comes from some little country like Malaysia and they have a tsunami, there goes your supply chain.
I think it's really important when looking at the vulnerability of your products, whether it's your product line, that you've got pieces that come, like you said, from different places. We did this a lot in IT, of trying to ascertain when it wasn't a crisis, where we had these single points of failure, where we needed to make sure we had agreements in place for other vendors in the event that, like we did, we had a situation where a vendor who we relied upon heavily, I mean, we called it the rapture of this particular vendor, which I'll keep the name out, but they disappeared over a weekend.
Wow.
Company gone. People were notified. They were dissolved.
Oh, my gosh.
People were just scattered to the four. I mean, it just was like one of those bad situations where they say, okay, don't come back Monday.
How big was the
company? Thank you for your work today. It was a pretty sizable company, you know, less than 500 employees, but still, they provided a lot of great pricing for us as far as acquiring and acquisitioning hardware, and it was really great for our other vendors who we hadn't used so much. And thankfully we had those, but I mean, things like that can happen. And if you have a single supplier for something, you know, and again, thinking about maybe with food service and people that work in those lines of business often are very much looking for contingencies, because what if a supplier all of a sudden has a problem with production and they need to get something from somewhere else? How quickly can you source it? How safe is it? You know, there's a lot of things that go into play when you are changing vendors, that it's better, I've learned in my short years of life, to make these decisions and figure things out, at least get yourself down the road a bit of what if scenario kind of planning, so that when a crisis does happen, and it's awesome to say that it's never going to happen and you're, you know, redundant and redundant, it's what happens if certain things fail? You know, like you said, what if this one little chip that we need to manufacture these iPhones is in a country that all of a sudden had a, you know, horrendous hurricane or tsunami or earthquake or unrest within the political government? I mean, you have to kind of think about what's really going on, especially when you're farming stuff outside.
Right. Well, and I was saying before you jumped on that there's a couple of companies here in Chicago that were speaking about the fact that they've hired a lot of their programmers and developers in, not Russia, but Eastern Europe countries, mm-hmm. because they're very well educated in the science and mathematics and fairly cost-effective. Speak English well. But the one thing they said is we had to have them meet up with the other, you know, either they flew someone out there to meet them or vice versa, because until you make that, there still was this face-to-face connection that was really valuable to them, and then they could work virtually better.
Right.
So I think that's a strategy that I think organizations need to think about and find some way of making that live connection, you know, at least once a year or something like that.
I totally agree, Nancy. I just from being managed remotely for many years, working for large companies and for smaller companies, and it's awesome, I think, for so many different levels, but really realigning, especially, you know, thankfully we haven't had a whole lot of challenges with being pointed in the wrong directions or just opposite directions, not even to label it good or bad. But some employees really, you know, and I'm certainly one of them, love to get together and have some social interaction where we talk about how we work together and what our challenges are that are keys to building a really good team. And, you know, you go back to all
you might not think somebody, you know, it's like, why are they always like this? Or why do they, you know, approach the problem like this? And then when you meet them face-to-face, you're like, oh, okay, that's why. Or, oh, you know, it just kind of clicks sometimes, but it takes that kind of real human connection to get past those hurdles.
Absolutely. And, you know, honestly, I think we really do know what works for us if we sit down and think about what are the things that really irritate when somebody does something that's just you find difficult. And identifying those as, are these my issues that I really prefer to get things early so that I don't have anything being delivered what I would even consider late, which is not late. And if you get into that crazy zone of where it isn't late, but in your head it's late, it can cause a lot of stress. And if you just knew that about your employee or about your manager, you could help talk that through. Look, I know this is going to make you uncomfortable, but we're still in the window of it being actually on time, but I'm going to be delivering this here, and I know it's going to cause you some stress, but here's what's come up.
Right.
And having, again, those conversations of knowing, it's still that same kind of contingency planning of being able to work together and understand what's challenging for one another and what are those pain points. And again, not taking them over for the other person. That's still, you know, maybe my bag that I have this whole thing about getting stuff in early, which is on time, and on time is late. you know, that's my deal. I have to own that. But it's nice that, you know, say you say, hey, this is what's happening. This is going to bump up against that.
Right. Now that you know what the expectation is, you can plan around it too.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And hopefully you don't get as upset.
Well, yeah, we hope not anyway.
And I'm
totally
speaking figuratively. This is not how Nancy and I get along, just to be clear.
It could be like that. No. So the other thing too, you know, I was saying earlier that organizations, like, because my husband works for a translation company, and they'll get manuals, equipment, user guides, but even safety. There's a study that I came across a while back that talked about, even though that country may not have as strict what we call OSHA requirements or safety requirements, it said if you put that in the native language of that person, you're going to have a higher success rate of people following the right procedures, because there's not going to be any kind of misinterpretation of them reading something in English that they may not necessarily understand as well as their own language.
Wow, that's brilliantly simple, but I bet it's not done very often. That's great.
Yeah, because they'll say, well, our universal corporate language is English, and so they don't see the need to translate it because there's an expense involved, of course.
Presumptuous.
Yeah.
And arrogant.
An arrogant,
but we're
going to
hire these people that also speak these other languages.
Yeah. Well, in fact, one of them, they actually is a food processing plant here in the United States, but they hire a bunch of people that are immigrants from Somalia.
Okay.
So they translate it in Somalis, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
Even though they live here in the U.S.
Wow.
Which I thought, that's a good commitment to those people, that they don't have to try to, even though technically, yes, you're an American now, you're supposed to be learning American. They just said, well,
or English.
Why risk it? Or English. Or I talk good too.
Sorry, I just had to. That was too fun. Too fun. And it's true.
Yeah,
it's not British English
there.
For sure.
It was there. Yeah, I laid it up for you. Sorry. Yeah.
It's American English for sure.
Right. And so that, to me, was like, that's a great commitment from that organization, and the fact that they're doing that, not making that expectation. So I'm sure the same with a lot of Hispanic-speaking people in the U.S., that a lot of them are in those skilled labored positions, and I think they should be putting some of that stuff in Spanish, just so that there's no misinterpretation or people don't make any mistakes, because obviously that can be a very costly issue if they don't do something right because they just didn't understand it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, so there's another study that I found, Trends in Global Employee Engagement,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting. So this is from Aon. So Aon's an insurance consulting company here in Chicago. But they show, let's see, global findings. There's a 61% so I think this is 61% of respondents. There's a out of all of the different organizations, safety, diversity, benefits, people, blah, 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 there's on average a 6% increase in employees being more engaged in a positive way in the organization. And then they broke it down by North America, Europe, and Asia Pacific. And it looks like, wow, the Asia Pacific group is much more engaged than the other two. And U.S. is probably tied with Europe, it looks like. You know, I mean, well, there's one high and one low, but I think the average score is probably about the same. So that does surprise me a little bit about Asia-Pacific. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't go all the way down. No, Africa in the Middle East is much higher. Oh, that's really interesting. Huh.
Yeah.
That surprises me quite a bit. Latin America, they're probably on the lowest. It says they've gone down minus 4 points on the average in Latin America. It says there are large differences in the dynamics of economic, business, and talent landscapes of emerging versus mature markets. So that kind of supports the Africa, Middle East increase. It shows
right.
No decreases at all, whereas I think almost every other group shows some degree of a decrease. But I don't know if that's because they're just now getting into those markets, because they call them not mature, they're emerging. So that could be part of it too. It's like, hey, they're hiring people in this country now. This is great. Which may not have always been the case.
Wow.
But
I'll put a
link to this, because this is really interesting stuff here that I don't know how many pages. I mean, this thing goes on and on forever, so I'm not going to drag it all out. Yeah, there's 50 pages.
Wow.
But really good information, and it was done in 2014, so it's still, I would say, relatively current. So let me put that in there. You know, and the other thing, too, is the fact that everything's stored in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can get files, we can access documents, we can collaborate on things. I mean, it's just, I was just talking to a woman in Malaysia in a call. She runs call centers that have thousands and thousands of employees, but all of their agents work off of what's called a Citrix box,
mm-hmm.
which is virtual. So like you were saying, that box could be anywhere in the world. They just plug it in and they're back online.
They are amazing. The Citrix technology has been, I've just been, for as long as I've been aware of it, and it's been 15 plus years that I've been aware of it, they're phenomenal. They are
mm-hmm.
the thin client dudes. It's just amazing. And having run Citrix boxes on the server side, it's just they are amazing how very flexible and versatile. And I have not kept up with it, so my assumption is just that it's gotten even more transparent.
More thin.
You know, just
more thin.
You don't even know that you're. And, you know, multiple people hitting the box, all working on a virtual machine, and then all these virtual servers, and it's just backups are a piece of cake, and failure, redundancy, and...
Well, they did say that there is a single point of failure if you are heavily involved in Citrix, unless you've got multiple redundancy servers backing stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say it is a call center, and everybody in a call center is... relies on that external connection.
Right.
And that goes down. You don't have a local box to plug everybody into then.
Sure. You mean like if the connection, like the WAN connection from the local site goes down. Well, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. At the time that I was doing a lot of this stuff, beginning of that was having some sort of redundant link. So you had, some sort of backup connection that you went to. If something like that were to happen, because you could have maybe not actually at the site have something go down, like a backhoe in Alabama has caused the connection for this entire outage of networks. I mean, that's
sure.
It took out Bell, so it took out AT&T's communications. I mean, it's just it can be crazy, and the rerouting of stuff, but it's. It's
yeah,
amazing.
That makes me think there was just something on the news the other day that the Russians had submarines near the ocean where the main, wires or whatever connectivity is to keep everybody connected globally.
Yeah.
So there is that threat a little bit,
I think we like to think that everything's all virtual and all in the cloud, but at some point there's a wire that connects something together.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
Yep.
Just amazing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm sure there's some, and that's why companies like Amazon and Google have servers sitting everywhere, just in case that something happens to one of those, or even the guys that do the trades, that they were outsmarting the system just because they could put their physical pipe of their technology running their trades closer to
in
them
the
so
loop.
They could trade a millisecond faster.
Right, right.
So,
made a big deal for them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Millions and millions. It was huge. I'll be Donald Trump.
And the dude that caught it, that was what was amazing, too, that he was able to figure it out.
Figured it out. Yep. outsmarted the people that were trying to outsmart everybody else.
Yeah. Well, to communicate that it was happening, he had to teach the people to whom he was reporting it to. It was just like, it was such a challenging thing.
But, so there are risks. There are rewards. I mean, the other big benefit of having a global workforce is you can have people working on stuff around the clock.
Right.
Versus, we're shutting the office down and nothing gets done. Or expecting people to take work home, and that gets wearing on your employees, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's so true.
Anyway, so I think that pretty much kind of wraps it up. I'll be putting links on our blog post if you want to follow the reports that I talked about. But thank you for joining me today, Allison, and we'll have to figure out what happened to our audience. They're down the hall somewhere.
I think they are. I mean, I've got all these donuts, so
I don't know. We better start eating.
I guess we'll have to.
All right. Thanks for joining.
You're welcome. Bye, everyone.